Welcome, everybody, to the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hanks. I cover the NFL at sportsonearth.com, comeback.com, and scout.com's Orange and Brown Report. I am joined, as usual, by my co-host, Brian.
Hey there.
How's it going after 1 week of NFL action in the books?
Well, I'm 2-0 in fantasy, so probably pretty good.
Well, what about in reality? I guess the Detroit Lions are 1-0, so that's also a good thing for you.
It's funny because I want the Lions to do well, but like I don't really, you know, it's not like it's crushing. It's not like it's exhilarating if they win or crushing if they lose to me anymore.
It is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be rooting for them real hard if they can ever get to the playoffs again, and you know, at least be in a playoff contest again.
Yeah.
You know, I'll root for them real hard to get that first win since 91 and second win since 57 or whatever in the postseason. But, otherwise it's just kind of like I just watch them and what happens, happens. So it was that game kind of went how I expected, except, the Lions actually won.
They completely Lionsed it out at the end.
The Colts they Lionsed better than the Lions Lionsed.
Yep. That's essentially it. There's a lot of interesting and downright wild stuff that went on in the first week of the 2016 NFL season. We're going to talk a little bit about that here in a minute. But first, we're going to talk about the big injury news of the week. Cleveland Browns starting quarterback Robert Griffin III broke a very odd bone. I have it written down here somewhere. This very odd bone.
Near the clavicle, correct?
Near the clavicle as part of the shoulder. And
in the shoulder system
as he was running out of bounds, he collided with Philadelphia Eagles cornerback Jalen Mills. And at first, you know, RG3 kind of thought it was just a shoulder sprain. He said after the game he believed it was a shoulder sprain and that he was in some pain, but he should be ready to go for Baltimore in week two. Further tests, though, revealed the fracture in this, I forget what exactly it's called. It's what connects the shoulder to the collarbone, and it's a very rare injury for a football player, for anybody to undergo. He's going to be reevaluated in 3 or 4 weeks to determine if perhaps surgical intervention will be required, but at the very least, he is on injured reserve. He can be the designated to return player, which means if he does come back this season, it won't be before the Week 10 game, also against the Baltimore Ravens. Josh McCown, who started many games over the past couple of years for the Cleveland Browns, is the new starter. The 37-year-old veteran retained this summer, not traded, primarily for this very reason.
Mm-hmm. No, it's smart. In hindsight, you know, there was talk of, you know, they got RG3 and they got the kid Cody Kessler from USC.
Right.
And should they look to trade Josh McCown to quarterback-hungry teams? And they were smart enough to say no. And
they had a very high asking price that nobody wanted to pay, and for good reason. Because,
right,
you know, RG3 has had a significant history of serious injuries. And unfortunately for RG3 and the Browns, history has repeated itself yet again. It's really unfortunate, you know, because RG3 ends up being the butt of all these jokes, particularly because of his injury background and the fact that, you know, he couldn't get through an entire regular season game without a significant injury. He's got a lot of those RG3 doubters and those chuckleheads who like to make jokes about injured players all riled up, so kudos.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how you can feel. I get it if you're like some salty Washington fan that, you know, had high hopes for that kid when he came in there, and then it didn't turn out to be what they thought that he was going to be or whatever, and so you're upset about that or whatever. But like, there's a lot of just random hate on RG3 that I don't get.
Yeah, I don't get it either.
He seems like a nice kid. He's been talented. He's talented, but he's been through quite an ordeal with different injuries throughout the year. Plus all the craziness, you know, politically speaking, and that happened in Washington.
Yeah,
and like,
of course.
So now he gets this fresh chance, and he looked great in the preseason. And you know, it was obviously in the first game. It was kind of back and forth. There was some couple good plays and a couple not so good plays, but like, you know, you expected it to take some time for it all to gel, but you know, and then now he's going to be sidelined for at least half this year, and you know, who knows? Who knows when we're going to see him again? If you know, if he has to get surgery after they look at him in 3 to 4 weeks, that's just going to be a further setback.
That's
I'm
it
sure.
for the season. Yeah. That would be shut down for the season. And then the other question is, of course, how Josh McCown, if RG3 is capable of coming back by week 10, you know, if Josh McCown is leading the team in the right direction, does that leave RG3 on the bench? Or furthermore, if the Browns are really struggling, will the Browns choose to keep RG3 benched just to preserve his health and get him ready for 2017?
Right.
Because Hugh Jackson at this point, you know, he said this week that he was seeing signs that RG3 seemed capable of being the Browns' long-term solution at quarterback, their quarterback of the future, so to speak. So it doesn't sound like it's a project that he's given up on quite yet, but a lot of things will dictate – a lot of things involving his health and what happens this season are going to dictate his future in Cleveland in 2017. And the other thing to consider at this point, too, with the Cleveland Browns is, A – Josh McCown, at 37 years old, I mean, he's had a number of nagging little injuries and has missed time over the past couple of seasons. And behind him, again, is that rookie Cody Kessler. And then there's another rookie, Kevin Hogan.
Oh, from Stanford, yeah.
Stanford, they signed him on the practice squad.
They signed him after the final cuts.
Yeah, he's
right?
on the yep. practice squad. Yeah. So, you know, you've got Josh McCown, but behind them are two rookies right now. So I'm curious to see if the Browns end up, depending on maybe how banged up McCown gets this weekend against the Ravens, if they might consider trying to find some sort of free agent veteran that's out there that they can just add, just to make sure that if something happens to McCown, that they don't have completely green options at quarterback and nothing else. So it's going to be important to keep an eye on that as well. But bottom line is, I just feel bad for the kid. I feel bad for RG3, you know, getting this fresh start and then yet another injury comes knocking on the door of his career. And, you know, you wonder, is this Sam Bradford? Will he keep getting chances? Is this Jake Locker, where the injuries just pile up to the point where he just says, forget it? So it's going to be a difficult couple of months ahead for RG3 and a pretty tough rehabilitation process because it's such a bizarre injury.
Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, feel bad for the Browns, too, just because, you know,
They had a lot of hopes on RG3
yeah, well,
this year.
Yeah, well, I mean, there was, like, all that flair we saw in the preseason with, you know, him heaving bombs to Terrell Pryor and especially Josh Gordon when he was playing in the preseason.
Yeah.
Because he's going to be back in a few weeks. And, like, there was all this, like, anticipation for what, like, that's going to look like.
Right.
You pair Gordon with Terrell Pryor and then also the rookie Corey Coleman. And, like, that was going to be, like, a nice-looking – I mean, it still is.
It still is. I mean, it's not like Josh McCown can't play quarterback.
Right. And,
he wouldn't be 37 years old and still in the league
at
this point.
And we saw him, you know, do plenty last year. There were plenty of times that even in that dysfunctional season, Josh McCown was able to, you know, direct that team to a lot of points, you know, just – take the ball down the field and get it to his receivers and all that. And to
Gary Barnage, by the way, who
right.
wasn't really on the same page with RG3 in week one.
Right. So now this still should, I mean, obviously this is a receiving core that's probably, or my guess is it's going to be better than what Josh McCown was dealing with last year. So
absolutely.
Once Gordon's back. So yeah, I mean, I think there's still some things there for him, but it was just that dynamism that RG3 brings
and the fact that he has one of the most accurate deep balls in the NFL mm-hmm. and he's surrounded by these receivers who are really
fast.
Good, really fast and specialize in catching those deep passes.
Fast and physical.
So that is and plus, you know, you get that dynamism of RG3's mobility and so that element of mm-hmm. Cleveland's offense is basically clipped.
Yeah, not that I've said for a long time, I don't think he's a running quarterback, but he's a mobile quarterback. So
right.
He was
a running quarterback as a rookie, that's for sure. I mean, no quarterback has ever ran like that before.
Yeah.
But he's had to kind of alter that in order to, you know, a little bit more self-preservation than he had at that point because he's had these injuries.
I think that was also a result of the coaching and the situation that he was in, that they just kind of wanted him to do that. And like,
they didn't want to teach him. I mean, there's been so many reports that particularly Mike Shanahan
had no interest in even trying
him in the pocket.
Which is a shame.
He didn't
want to
coach him up.
That's the thing, is that he is fat. The biggest question, obviously, is durability, and that's why we're talking about him. But like, as far as his actual play on the field, you know, that's what was crazy. Like, he made that play – again, this was actually a running play, but he made that play Sunday where he started to run, and a defender came up, and he, like, pump-faked while he's on the run, got them to, like, freeze for a second, and he took off, you know? And it's,
yeah.
And it's like, that's how he should use his speed, is only if he's going to run, it should only be if he's, like, just trying to elude and get out of bounds and all that stuff. I haven't seen him, at least not since, not this year, in the time, limited time we've seen him, just like going out there and running and plowing into people. He's actually trying
right.
to get out of bounds
trying
and trying to
bounds,
preserve himself.
Try to throw the ball away and things like
and
that.
And that's what's
he
crazy
is.
About this was like a freak little hit right on the sideline as he's going
to
bounds.
Bounds.
As
yeah.
he's trying to get out of bounds. So what are you going to do?
Well, that wasn't the only wild thing that happened in week one. Six of out of the 16 games were decided by two or fewer points. 12 of the 16 by a touchdown or less.
Well, see, this makes perfect sense because when we went to do our picks last week, or we were even before we got to the picks, we were talking about how it was going to be a crazy week. There's a lot of weird matchups. That's kind of hard to pick right out of the gate.
Absolutely.
There was what teams that seemed like they were going to be better teams were on the road against teams that seemed like they were not going to be as good. And so, but then that always makes for a weird first week, certainly. So definitely it lived up to that competitiveness.
And you had some wild comebacks, too. We mentioned it briefly earlier, the Detroit Lions coming back and getting that win over the Indianapolis Colts.
You can't call that a comeback because they
well,
were up 21-3 in that game.
Yeah, but then they went down and then they came back up again. The weird roller coaster that was that game.
Yeah,
how about that?
Yeah, yeah.
The Kansas City Chiefs also overcame.
That was a comeback.
That was a comeback. That was the biggest deficit in team history, I think, or at least in 40 years or more, in their win. And a lot of last second field goals made and missed.
Right.
That influenced the outcome of so many games. Graham Gano missing the 50-yard field goal, and the Carolina Panthers lose to the Denver Broncos. Chandler Catanzaro, he missed his field goal against the New England Patriots at the end there, ending up with the Patriots winning by two. And then you have the weirdness with the Dallas Cowboys. They seemed to be able to set up a field goal. They only had about 12 seconds left. And no timeouts. But Terrence Williams, after he caught the ball, decided not to run out of bounds and instead into a couple of defenders, New York Giants defenders that were on the field, and the time ran out, and the Cowboys lost.
God, you just got to be kicking yourself there. That was – yeah, you got to
He's
give...
not even kicking himself. He's saying, yeah, you think you're so good, you come here and try to take my spot, is what he's saying to the haters.
That's
he's
fine.
He's not even kicking himself. He's kicking everybody else who's kicking him. He's kicking back.
Yeah, well, I mean, regardless, he's the one. They're not the ones that stayed in bounds and lost the game effectively. But, I mean, or at least at that point, you would have shifted the onus to somebody else. But yeah, that was a fun game. I mean, it was that was kind of back and forth, and you know, there was. I thought Dak looked good. You know, I thought Dak looked as good as you could expect. You know,
I think Dak looked good
as a rookie in his first start,
not facing a vanilla defense, but one that schemed to try mm-hmm. to confuse a young guy like him. The Cowboys really struggled to finish drives, though. I mean, they were settling for field goals instead of scoring touchdowns. I think partially because you know Dak and Dez Bryant couldn't really get on the same page. There weren't a lot of deep balls thrown in that game. So, you know, but for a rookie debut, I mean, but you want to talk about rookie debuts. I mean, Carson Wentz.
Oh, yeah.
He looked very sharp against the Cleveland Browns. And granted, Cleveland Browns defense is going to be struggling, especially early in this season, given how young they are and how many
new
faces
there are. They're not going to be confused with a good defense.
They're not going to be confused with a good defense. But at the same time, I mean, that's still an NFL defense that is – you know, trying to make things difficult for a rookie. And not only that,
you could see that some of what he was doing wasn't necessarily just terrible defense. Then the guy's wide open and he threw and he was making tough throws
in tight
windows.
He was making tough throws in tight windows.
So that's regardless of defense or, you know, or what you want to say about the Browns defense. He definitely impressed.
And I was also impressed by the New England Patriots. I mean, nobody really believed that they could go into Arizona in this primetime game and win. Without Tom Brady, without Tom Brady and without Rob Gronkowski, who didn't travel while he's dealing with a hamstring injury. And so that was pretty impressive. I mean, it came down to that last play, that missed mm-hmm. field goal that allowed the Patriots to win that game. But, you know, hats off to them, you know, without two star players on offense going into, you know, the, you know, the second place team in the NFC last year, a team that a lot of people have Super Bowl aspirations for this year, and going in there and winning was extremely impressive.
Yeah, definitely. That was a great game. Everything you expected, you know, and two teams that you could easily see playing in the Super Bowl this year.
Absolutely.
And
the level of talent in New England is just off the charts.
Yeah, it was fantastic to watch. David Johnson looked great. Larry Fitzgerald looked amazing, like he always does. Yeah,
that is 100th touchdown catch.
Yeah. Yeah, it was that was a hell of a way to end that first Sunday and what was lots of games to sit through all day. So
yeah, and then you get to Monday night where you kind of have a couple of contrasting games with a doubleheader. First, you have the Pittsburgh Steelers just marching the ball down the field, scoring, taking risks, doing that Ben Roethlisberger to Antonio Brown thing that always works so well, and going into Washington and getting a win in what was a pretty entertaining game for what it was worth.
Mm-hmm.
And then you follow that up with the LA Rams getting walloped 28-0 by a San Francisco 49ers team that nobody had any expectations for this year. Blaine Gabbert, y'all.
Yeah, I called
getting beat by Blaine Gabbert.
I was having a hard time picking that. Like, a lot of people were just like, "Oh, Rams." And I had a hard time picking that one because I could see, again, I called it out. I said I thought the San Francisco – granted, we had brain farts last week saying that
– Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mangini is not
Jim
the
O'Neill. And the funny thing is, too, about Jim O'Neill, former Browns defensive coordinator, couldn't get anything done in Cleveland, is that he's got all these – I see all these reports. Players love Jim O'Neill's scheme.
Oh, they're really into it.
They're really into it. And it's just like
– Eric Reed is like calling late at night to ask questions about
it. Oh, my God.
It
makes me really wonder about the Browns and the Niners and – You can't ever predict these sorts of things.
But this is my
aside from Jeff Fisher.
This was my point
being
last week.
In 7-9 BS.
This is my point last week was, you know, that it's about because it's the old coach's adage. It's Jimmy's and Joe's, not X's and O's, right? It's the guys you have on your team,
right?
So you know, just because Jim O'Neill didn't look very good for Cleveland last year didn't necessarily mean he was going to go take the 49ers defense and you're going to see the same result on
the
field.
Also, if you think about it too, I mean, a lot of the guys that were, you know, major role players or bigger role players in that Jim O'Neill defense are no longer with the Browns. They're all over the place. Paul Kruger's been cut. Justin Gilbert is in Pittsburgh and so on. So, yeah, I mean, it you know, there's a combination there. I mean, there's players and their scheme. And sometimes one is more to blame than the other.
Right, but again, it's like
you never really even know
who you're playing and where's your head tonight, you know? And that was the other question.
I mean, where's your head when you're a Cleveland Brown when you know what's coming, when you know that you've got dead coaches walking essentially?
Yeah, but that's the Rams look putrid.
Putrid.
And they had a hard time dealing with San Francisco's defense all night.
Oh yeah.
And Case Keenum looked more overmatched than I expected because I never thought Case Keenum was going to come out and beat, you know, Joe Montana or anything like that.
No, but I thought he has, you know, Alex Smith type capabilities. Pegged him in that kind of realm.
Because he knows the offense real well and he seems like a sharp guy and he's got the ability to get the ball out pretty quick and like you figure they would do some things, but it wasn't working.
It was
Monday,
not
that's
working.
For sure. And as far as the Steelers game go, I saw something in that game, and I wish I had a line into Todd Haley to see if they could to see if I could promote them to do this more. But I think that what they should do is, whenever Sammy Coates is on the field, make sure that Eli Rogers is always right next to him.
That was the fastest football ricochet I've seen in my life. I can't believe he was able to bring that in after.
That was one of the weird.
Coates.
Yeah, that was definitely a weird play.
That was really weird.
And so the thought is that if Sammy Coates is going to have a hard time hanging on to the ball, you know, then that could happen more often that you throw it to him and the ball just pops out. So if Eli Rogers is there, maybe he'll catch another one. Who knows?
Oh, perhaps. The other thing of note, of course, in that game is that Josh Norman wasn't on Antonio Brown, but maybe 2-3-4 plays.
I don't think anybody was on Antonio Brown that
night. It's pretty impossible. Rashad Breland was, in quotes, the guy in coverage most of the time on AB. But Josh Norman said, you know, it's not his scheme. It wasn't his game plan. It wasn't up to him who he was assigned to cover.
He's just doing what
they
tell him to
do. He was on one side of the field, and AB was on the other, and never the twain shall meet,
mm-hmm.
which is probably good for the young, expensive cornerback and his confidence.
Yeah, I mean, I think his confidence is part of it. I think even more than his confidence, it might just be the perception of things that, you know, Washington went out, spent a bunch of money on the best cornerback in the league last year, and if the last thing they want is the fans and the media and anybody being able to come back and say, like, okay, you spent all that money and this dude just got roasted in the first game. You know
right,
what I mean?
But as John Gruden was saying when he was calling the game, like, you can plan whatever. You can make whatever plans you mm-hmm. want to try to stop Antonio Brown, but you're not going to do it.
It's not going to work.
It's just not going to work. It's just one of these it's one of these freakish things.
Yeah, my favorite part was, like, the pregame, they were talking, you know, those ESPN guys, the new crew there, and Randy Moss and all them, and it came around to Charles Woodson, and, like, everybody was coming up with their ideas what to do, and Charles Woodson was like, I don't know what to tell you, because, like, we played them last year, and we doubled them the whole game, and he had 280 yards and three touchdowns or whatever the stats were. So.
Yeah, so it's just, like, good luck
with
that.
You can try. That doesn't mean it's going to work.
The only thing, I said this last year, the only thing that stops Antonio Brown is if Ben's out with an injury. That's literally it.
Well,
because
we saw it
last year with Vic and Landry Jones having to come in a couple of times. And that's the only thing that can slow down Antonio.
And that's the thing is that and that's what we saw from the Steelers looks like, you know, again, you can say it every year.
It looks like last year's Steelers.
Barring injury, they're a machine on offense at this point. And that defense still needs a little bit to come together. But
that offense is so good that it can carry defense.
It can
carry.
Well, that's where I was going with this, is that the defense has some room to go still, but at the same time, they don't need to get much better in order for this to be a championship-caliber team. I mean, this is – or at least one posed to make a deep run in the playoffs.
Right.
So, but that's, you know, there's 15 more games before
we're
even
more
talking
games
about
to
that.
Worry,
so.
Before we worry about that. Let's talk about Cam Newton. Cam Newton was hit a lot by the Denver Broncos defense, something we kind of expected given the nature of that defense and what we saw in the Super Bowl last year between these two teams. You know, I've seen anything from a range of 8 quarterback hits, 3 sacks. I've seen, 10 quarterback hits and 3 sacks. But there was also multiple shots that he took helmet to helmet, especially when he was moving outside of the pocket. Some of those hits got fined. Safety Darian Stewart, linebacker Brandon Marshall combined for over $42,000 worth of fines by the league. And the league also did admit that there was one helmet to helmet call that should have been flagged that they missed. But when you look at the tape, even if he's outside of the pocket, even if he seems like he's running but he is getting ready to throw, there were times where it was obvious that there was a little bit of targeting on the head there for Cam Newton, and that the refs don't call these things the same for Cam and for, I would even argue, someone like Ben Roethlisberger, because they are big
mm-hmm.
and they're more physical than mm-hmm. other quarterbacks, and so they don't and because they might be stars, but they're not Tom Brady.
They're not
trying to protect these guys, because they kind of think, oh well, you know, Cam Newton, Ben Roethlisberger, they're not really out there protecting themselves either, because they play this style.
Well, they're
of quarterback.
Big tough guys, and they can take a lot
guys.
Of punishment. So,
but then you have unfair standards mm-hmm. where one type of quarterback is treated one way and another type is treated another way.
I mean, I definitely think that exists. There's two sides to the issue, obviously.
Yes.
And one is that Cam is a big, fast dude that runs a lot. And when he runs, he doesn't necessarily run like when Tom Brady runs. He doesn't scamper for 5 yards and slide.
No, he'll make contact. He'll be interested in running you over.
I don't know if I would quite go as far as to say as he invites contact, but he's certainly not shying away from it.
No.
And
no, that's one of his calling cards.
And so part of what we saw was, I think, a byproduct of that style. And that's that there are times when a guy's coming in and he's trying to ram his shoulder into your shoulder or his shoulder into your chest or something like that, and your helmets are bigger than your heads. It's going to clash together. There's going to be plays like that.
Oh, yeah.
But there was also a lot of, like, okay, that's definitely – they're just trying to, like, get extra shots in on Cam.
Yeah, you could see that there were times where there was a little bit of launching, a little bit of, like – I'm definitely trying to hit this guy really, really hard, and if he gets knocked out of the game, he gets knocked out of the game.
Yeah, it's send a message and let him know that
we haven't forgotten about you.
Yeah, let him feel it, all that stuff, and I get it. But
I get it.
At the same time, it's I don't know, especially when it's your quarterback, and like you said, can you do that to Aaron Rodgers and get away with it? Probably not.
Probably not.
Can you do that to Tom Brady? Probably not.
Probably not.
And
the fact that the fines, it's just like, I saw somebody tweet, oh, okay, so I guess Cam Newton's brain is worth $42,540 to the NFL. Not a penny more, based on these
apparently
fines.
Not.
Apparently not. But at the same time, I also want to say, Carolina Panthers are a heck of a football team. They lost that game with Cam getting beaten the way he was. They only lost that game by 1 point.
Oh, they played well enough to win that game. They were, especially early, they were really killing it.
They were really killing it early. They only lost the game by 1 point. Denver only scored 21 points. Carolina's not out of the equation here just because the Broncos seem to have their number right now. Mm-hmm. They're not out of the equation of Super Bowl contention or anything like that.
Again, you got to give credit to the Broncos.
Oh, that Denver defense has not lost a step.
That was one I thought could go either way. It was really close, and Denver. I picked Denver. They end up winning, but whatever. I'm not like blowing any horns here or anything like that. But the point being, that defense is still that damn good, and that Trevor Siemian is not a reason to just say, oh yeah, they're not going to win. You know what I mean?
Sure.
He definitely did enough to not lose the game, and that's what he needs to do for them.
Right.
And C.J. Anderson looked good. That running game looked really good. That Kubiak really has his hands around things there.
Absolutely.
They're gonna be a beast to deal with this year.
Yet again.
And I mean, that was kind of what I expected beforehand, but it was mainly just confirmed what I saw in that game. And you know, obviously at the end of the game they were able to pull it out. But you know, both those teams are great teams, and they're going to be fun to watch all year. That's the thing. That night game, the Sunday night game, those were probably four of the best teams in the league. And so it was good football on the first week for sure.
There was some good football. Well, we're going to take a quick break here at the F-Ball NFL podcast, and we're going to move on to week two. That's right. It's time for week 2 minute picks right after the break. So stay tuned. Are back here at the F-Ball NFL podcast, and it is time for our week 2 minute picks.
Oh yeah, minute picks.
16 games again this weekend, and Monday night and Thursday. There are no bye weeks just yet. We start, of course, on Thursday night. Color rush in effect.
Oh boy.
New York Jets are at the Buffalo Bills. Yes, we got an AFC East rivalry matchup here. You know what? I'm going to go with the New York Jets. They took the Cincinnati Bengals to the limit last week, and though the Bengals ended up with the victory, they did get 7 sacks on Bengals quarterback Andy Dalton. That defense is legit. The offense is running fairly well. I mean, people don't really quite like Ryan Fitzpatrick. I kind of do. And Buffalo looked pretty anemic against the Baltimore Ravens, being held to only 7 points last week, right? Was that 7 points,
yeah,
I believe?
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with the Jets getting that road win.
Yeah, this one's a little tough. I think on paper, definitely the Jets seem to be the pick here. Obviously they have a really stout defensive front with all those guys, and similar to Baltimore, that could give the Bills a tough time. The Bills also, Sammy Watkins has a foot issue. We don't know exactly what that means, if he's going to play or not. I think they're going to be without their left tackle. There's a lot of things.
Yeah, they are going to be without their left tackle.
Yeah, so there's a lot of things pointing to probably, you know, the Jets should win. The only thing that would cause hesitation there is that the Bills have had the Jets' number for a while now. And I'm not sure why, but, like, that's who knocked them out of the playoffs last year.
Right.
And like, there's been a couple other –
knocked them out of the ability to get to the playoffs.
That's what I meant. Yeah, sorry. Knocked them out of the playoff picture at the end of the season and all that. So, we've seen that. It's in Buffalo. It's a night game. I don't expect that Buffalo defense or offense to look that bad as they did last week. I mean, they should be able to get things going better. So, but I don't really know.
You took the whole minute.
I'll take the Jets, I guess.
Moving on to Sunday. AFC North action. Cincinnati Bengals without Vontaze Burfict will be at the Pittsburgh Steelers without Le'Veon Bell and Martavis Bryant. AJ Green had his way with Darrell Revis last week against the Jets. We already talked about what Antonio Brown did to the poor Washington defense. This has a potential to be a very high scoring game, considering the quality of the Steelers secondary at present. The only saving grace is if the Steelers front seven can kind of get after Andy Dalton in the way that the Jets front seven did last week. But even that was to no avail.
It was not enough to stop Andy Dalton and the Bengals. That's for sure.
Not enough to stop Andy Dalton and the Bengals. So that's what I think is going to be the crux of this. This is going to be high scoring game. I think both teams can run the ball really well too, but I'm going to go with the home team. I think the Steelers are going to keep riding some momentum, but break out your Band-Aids, folks. People are going to get hurt here. People are not going to be feeling good on Monday.
Yeah, this has turned into quite a rivalry over the last few years, and one of the best rivalries in the NFL, if you will. And so it should be a fun game to watch. Both teams are very good. The Steelers are at home, and I don't see any reason that they're going to slow down even against that good Bengals defense.
The only thing that gives me pause is that the Steelers do better in Cincinnati, and the Bengals do better in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, historically there's been a lot of weird numbers or weird things like that going on. But I'll still take the Steelers here. Just, you know, prove me wrong. They look unstoppable on Monday as far as that offense. So I like that in this situation at home against a rival.
Tennessee Titans are at the Detroit Lions. We talked about Detroit almost lionsing away a victory last week against the Indianapolis Colts, but being able to pull it off at the end. Tennessee, you know, they were dealing with the situation facing the Minnesota Vikings. Sean Hill was at quarterback. And even though Adrian Peterson had a very mild day, very, very few yards, it still wasn't enough to keep the Vikings at bay, mainly because Minnesota's got that defense.
Mm-hmm.
And Tennessee, that offense, I still don't know. I'm going to go Detroit here. They're the home team. They've got the better quality offense. And, again, the Titans, until I see it, I am not going to trust it.
Yeah, I mean, as nervous as I am, anytime I pick the Lions, I'm going to take the Lions here. The Titans, I don't think that they're going to have as hard a time moving the ball as they did against Minnesota's defense. Detroit's not quite that good on defense, but they're okay. And at home, I think they should play well. Stafford looks like he's kind of picked up where he left off the second half last year with the Jim Bob Cooter offense.
Yep.
And I think that, you know, Tennessee's defense is still kind of a work in progress. So I like the Lions at home. It'll probably be another higher scoring game, but I like them to pull it out. But who knows with those guys.
Next up, the Baltimore Ravens are at the Cleveland Browns. Browns, of course, starting Josh McCown at quarterback now that RG3 is injured. Baltimore, meanwhile, far healthier than they were last year. Though keep in mind, when the Ravens and the McCown-led Browns met last season, McCown threw for over 450 yards, and the Browns won 33-30 in overtime. I don't see that happening this year, though. there's a lot of health and talent in Baltimore. That defense was very, very legitimate against the Bills a week ago, and I think they can do the same in Cleveland. Things are just not looking well for the Browns right now. They might be able to play this team a little bit tough, but I just don't see their defense being able to do what Baltimore's defense can do, so I'm going to go with the Ravens.
Yeah, I mean, I could see, you know, McCown stepping in and just the offense functioning in a decent way, and they'll, you know, maybe, you know, especially if they're at home and all that. But you're right. Baltimore's defense is healthier than they were last year. They're kind of back, or they at least after one game, you know, they look like they're kind of back to that old Baltimore way. So that shouldn't be quite the issue. And that the Baltimore should be able to move the ball on the Browns. I think everybody's gonna be able to move the ball on the Browns this year. So
yeah.
And with the deep threat that Mike Wallace looks like he could be, that could be a problem. I'll take the Ravens. I wouldn't be too surprised if the Browns somehow do something, but I'll take the Ravens.
Next up, Dallas Cowboys are at Washington. Another NFC East rivalry game. second week in a row for the Cowboys. You know, if the Dak to Dez connection can get going this week, whether it's Josh Norman, whether it's Rashad Breeland, especially if it's Breeland, I think, but even if it's Josh Norman, I think that they really need to start exploiting that matchup. I think, you know, Dallas is on a pretty long winning streak in Washington on the road. Granted, a lot of that probably had to do with the existence of Tony Romo. But I, you know, I've been positive on Dak all summer, and I have no reason to change my mind now. Meanwhile, Kirk Cousins looked very inconsistent, and he was playing again at home against the Steelers on Monday night. That inconsistency, I mean, he could put together a really good game here and Washington could win, but at this point, I'm going to go with the Cowboys.
Yeah, I like the Cowboys. I picked them last week. I like the Cowboys in general. I picked them last week to beat the Giants at home in Dak's, you know, rookie debut and all that stuff, and Zeke's rookie debut, all that. And, you know, they definitely played the game. They played it well enough. They played a good game. They played it well enough to win, but just couldn't take care of business in that situation. Going on the road against a pretty solid, you know, Washington team, I think is probably a tough task for a young guy like Dak. And so I think that they might have some struggles here. It's the NFC East is, you know, you never know what you're going to get. There's probably going to be a competitive game. I'll take Washington here because they're at home, I guess.
Next, we have the New Orleans Saints at the New York Giants. New Orleans lost last week to the Oakland Raiders in New Orleans after putting up over 500 yards of total offense to nearly 500 yards of total offense for the Raiders.
That was a hell of a game, too.
That was a wild game, and I think that something like that is going to happen again, but I think it's going to not work out again in the Saints' favor. I think that the New York Giants, especially, you got Victor Cruz back, and he looks, you know, healthy, and you know, he made some plays last week against the Cowboys. If the Saints can put up 500 yards at home and still lose against the Oakland Raiders, then I don't think that they're going to go to the New York Giants and win, so I pick Giants.
Yeah, I wish I could pick over here. I mean, if you recall, these two teams got together last year and scored basically 100 points.
Yep.
And which was a thrilling game and fun to watch and all that. And the Saints end up on the wrong side of it, like most of their season last year. This one's in New York. It's going to be a different story. Oh, I don't know. Yeah, like I said, a high-scoring game. I guess I'll pick the Giants because they're at home again. You know, I'm not ready to pick the Saints on the road, considering that defense.
San Francisco 49ers are at the Carolina Panthers. Yes, San Francisco just came off of a 28-0 drubbing of the Los Angeles Rams. But I have to go with the Carolina Panthers here. You got Cam Newton. You got that really great defense. Kelvin Benjamin is back. He's making plays. Even if he wasn't there, they made plays without him last year. Carolina has won 13 straight at home, including the playoffs, and I don't see them getting this loss here after what they went through last week with the Denver Broncos. Carolina for sure. That's my pick.
I'm really interested to see this Jim O'Neill 49er defense that Eric Reid's so excited about and all
what
that.
What they do against Cam and
yeah,
company.
Basically what they do against like a real legit offense, and you know, an offense that's tough to deal with and has a lot coming at you in different ways. And I think that'll be an interesting thing to watch. I think Carolina is just a different class of team right now, and they're at home coming off a tough loss. I don't see them losing this game at all. I think that's what will make it interesting, though, is to watch that defense against that offense.
Miami Dolphins travel to Foxborough and take on the New England Patriots. Of course, Jimmy Garoppolo under center for three more games while Tom Brady serves his stupid deflated football suspension thing. Rob Gronkowski did practice on a limited basis today, but he also did so last week before not traveling with the team. And why not keep that guy under wraps and try to get him completely healthy and have him be ready when Brady's back?
Sure.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's what the Patriots ultimately end up doing.
Especially, you know, if they can win games without him.
If they can win games without him. I mean, if they can win on the road against Arizona without Rob Gronkowski and without Tom Brady, then Miami is not going into Foxborough and winning this game. Now, New England has struggled facing Miami when in Miami in the recent past. That's fine. But this is a New England Patriots all the way.
Yeah, I think we saw, we discussed briefly earlier, like, when we talked about last week, how just complete a team this New England Patriots team is.
Deep and complete. They're like the Cincinnati Bengals.
The only incomplete right now is the fact that they don't have their world class starting quarterback who will be back in a couple weeks. And God, how scary is that going to be? So. No, I think this is another tough draw for Miami. They had to go on the road last week to Seattle, and that's a tough game.
Yep.
And although they almost won, and they played really well, but yeah, and you know, they'll probably give the Patriots a pretty good game for a bit at least. But no, I don't see how the Patriots lose this game.
The last game of the early slate on Sunday is the Kansas City Chiefs at the Houston Texans. Kansas City, of course, that big come from behind win last week. Alex Smith throwing more pass attempts than he had in any game in 2015.
This is in Houston?
This is in Houston.
Okay.
That, you know, Houston's got, of course, a good defense. I'm preparing myself heavily to eat crow at the end of the season and my thoughts about Brock Osweiler. this is going to be a really interesting game.
Yeah.
I think it's a really solid matchup. I am concerned a little bit about the Kansas City defense. They lost a starting quarterback and cornerback in free agency, and Justin Houston's out until November, which has thoroughly changed the landscape of exactly how that defense has been working. Didn't get a lot of pressure last week against mm-hmm. the San Diego Chargers. So that's something that concerns me. I think Kansas City is a very good team, but I think Houston, I like the home field advantage. There's a few things in Houston I really like. DeAndre Hopkins, Will Fuller, I think would be hard on that Kansas City secondary. So I'm going to go with the Texans.
I went earlier on one game. I went long on one game earlier, and
you've taken most of the minute
on a bunch of these. But anyway, I think again, like you said, I think this should be an intriguing matchup, fun one to watch. Both these teams are pretty good, pretty solid all around. There's, you know, they're not like the glaring holes on either side of these teams. So
yeah,
so it should be a good one to watch. Again, I'll take the home team. I probably would like Kansas City if it were in Kansas City, but I don't know. I'm kind of buying this Houston thing for now.
This should be a fun game to watch,
yeah,
too.
I think
it's a good matchup. We have five games scheduled for 3 o'clock Eastern, or sorry, 3 o'clock Central.
So three last week and five this week.
Yes, because reasons.
You can't just give us four so we can have quad box and watch all the games? Come on.
No. Impossible. First up. The Seattle Seahawks travel to Los Angeles for the L.A. debut of the Rams. So the Rams go to San Francisco last week, lose 28-0. Seattle, meanwhile, had a slow start but ultimately pulled off the victory at home against Miami. For these reasons, I have Seattle winning, but it's not going to be 28-0. The Rams will score points in this game. It just won't be enough points because Seattle, I have them still winning.
All right, I'm gonna go in a different direction here. I'm gonna call the Rams in this game because I think they played worse than they should have last week or on Monday.
And you need to get 7 wins to have some 7-9 BS.
Oh yeah,
right?
you're gonna have to play good 7 times. So no, I think it's, you know, they're juiced up. It's their home debut in the Coliseum.
And the Rams play Seattle pretty
tough. That's my main reason, is that the Rams play Seattle well. For some reason, every year, they step their game up when they play Seattle. So I think in front of the home crowd for the home opener, especially coming off an embarrassing beating against San Francisco, I'll say the Rams are going to win. I'm not sold on this, but I'll say it.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are at the Arizona Cardinals. I see the Cardinals getting their win here, this redemption a little bit. You know, I think it's going to be a nice year for the Tampa Bay offense in particular, and Jameis Winston. I think there's going to be a step forward there for sure. But not so much so that they can go to Arizona and win, especially with Arizona being one of the best teams in the league coming off of a very close loss to the Patriots last week. So I think Arizona here.
Yeah, I think I do like I was very impressed by Jameis last week.
Yeah.
Especially towards the end of the game, he's just killing it, you know, flinging the ball all over the place and all that. I like where that's going, I think. But this is just a tough task. I mean, you're going to go play this Arizona team because it's in Arizona, right?
Yes, yeah, it is in Arizona.
It's a late game. So, yeah, I mean, just to go across the country and play – one of the best teams in the league is going to set up tough for you. You know what I mean? The Bucks are still a work in progress. I'll go with, you know, the finished product at home.
Next, we have the Jacksonville Jaguars traveling to San Diego to take on the Chargers. The Chargers relinquished quite a lead on the road in Kansas City last week, whereas the Jacksonville Jaguars played pretty tough against the Green Bay Packers team that, you know, it's going to be rough for anybody who faces them.
Packers are being good again.
I see some corner turning in Jacksonville, and I'm going to put my money where my mouth is and say that they can go on the road to San Diego and win this game. Because if you're going to turn the corner, you're going to win on the road.
Yeah. I don't know. I could see this going either way.
Oh, yeah, me too. But I'm committed to the Jaguars turning the corner this year. And like I said, if you turn the corner, you have to win on the road.
You're right. I think that's definitely the case, that you need to be able to put some wins together while you're away from home. They weren't able to do it at home last week even, but obviously Green Bay is really good. San Diego, yeah, we saw them look good last week in the first half, and then, you know, we saw them give up all those points to, you know, the thunderous Alex Smith passing situation. I'll take the Jaguars too. Why not? I'm obviously not sold on it. I'm not sold on either of these teams. I'm going to pick the Jaguars because I want to root for them.
All right. Next, we have the Atlanta Falcons. They are at the Oakland Raiders last week. Of course, the Oakland Raiders getting that quality road win in New Orleans. Meanwhile, Atlanta's defense looks terrible. And if Atlanta's defense looks terrible and Oakland has an offense that can hang with that juggernaut in New Orleans, and then they can get that win in New Orleans, Atlanta's not getting this. I'm going with the Raiders. 2-0, baby.
Yeah, I think this is a tough one for Atlanta. I mean, they let that game slip through their hands last week. And
which seems to me like it's going to be the theme of the season for them for some reason.
Yeah, slipping through the fingers, yeah.
Yep.
Sure. Because, I mean, they definitely have tons of talent on the offensive side of the ball. But like you said, that the defense is rough, which is so weird. You know, Dan Quinn comes there with this reputation for the Seattle defense that he came from and all that. And it just hasn't been able to translate in a couple years, in the second year now. So,
well, I mean, look at how long it's kind of taken. And when you're talking about, like, Jacksonville with Gus Bradley.
Yeah.
You know, and he comes from that Seattle defense background, too.
Yeah, exactly. So, Atlanta's definitely... they're having a hard time. Vic Beasley has not turned out so far.
No.
He's just not been able to get the pressure on the quarterback like they had hoped when they drafted him so high. So they're having struggles, and they're going on the road to the other side of the country to play a really tough Oakland team. I like Oakland here as well.
Next, pray for the man. Indianapolis Colts at the Denver Broncos.
Oh, boy.
We saw what the Denver Broncos, of course, did to Cam Newton and the Carolina offense last week with big hits. Poor Andrew Luck. This is not going to be good. This is going to be bad. This is going to be very bad, and I really hope that young man doesn't get hurt, because I am on the record for being completely furious with the way that the Colts have handled the roster around him since drafting him in 2012. It just bothers me. But
it's hard to deny. It's hard to argue that they've done a good job of putting pieces in place around Andrew Luck.
Denver wins this game.
No, I think this one is probably the easiest one to pick on the board at this point, because Indy is having lots of struggles on defense. They're even having some struggles on offense, but lots of struggles on defense. And they're going to Denver to play this ridiculous defense, and what now looks like, even with Trevor Siemian, I don't care if he's running
a
the show or not.
Very effective offense.
That
I don't
offense
know if that
is
going to
be it's Kubiak's names all over it at this point. And they've got some creative running style stuff that, you know, and C.J. Anderson looks good. And the way we've seen teams run on this Indy defense, I mean, that's the thing, is you're going to go play a team with a tough defense and a really good running game, and that just does not set up well for the Colts, who have a pretty good offense and just dismal defense.
Right. Finally, Sunday night. Well, not finally, but finally on Sunday. Sunday night football. Green Bay Packers are at the Minnesota Vikings. A lot of people are assuming that this is going to be the Vikings' debut of quarterback Sam Bradford. Last week it was Sean Hill, which made sense. Sean Hill has been in that system, and Sam Bradford decidedly had not.
Mm-hmm.
Now he has a little bit more time to prepare, so it's quite possible we could be seeing Sam Bradford here. Green Bay Packers, they looked mortal, in my opinion, against Jacksonville.
A little bit.
And
I think part of that was Jacksonville just being pretty good. But
and
yeah.
I also think it didn't help that it was, you know, 90 mm-hmm. degree day with full humidity, something that the Packers don't really deal with all that often. I'm going to go with Minnesota here. I'm going with Minnesota because I think Minnesota's defense is going to have Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay offense's number. But I understand that it is Aaron Rodgers in prime time, and that's a thing with a capital T.
Sure, sure.
But I'm going to go with the Vikings defense.
Yeah, no, I like the Vikings a lot here, too. I'm not saying that this is – I think it's going to be a romp or this is the easiest thing to pick or anything like that, because I think that obviously the Packers have a real good chance to win this game. I just like the Vikings here. They're opening this beautiful stadium.
It is really beautiful, too.
And, oh, it's an awesome stadium. They did a great job. You know, congrats to the taxpayers of that area for buying such a nice stadium. But as far as this game goes, you know, they're at home Sunday night under the spotlight in their new stadium against a rival, and this defense is for real.
Oh, it's for real.
And I think that's just enough to be on the Vikings side in this game.
And finally, Monday Night Football. The Philadelphia Eagles come to where we are, the city of Chicago.
Chicago.
To face the Chicago Bears. Last week, the Bears lost 23-14, against the Houston Texans in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Philadelphia, it's really hard for me to tell exactly what Philadelphia is in terms of offense and defense because they were playing the Browns last week, and the Browns are
beyond
a work in progress. They are the step one of what they're trying to do as a multi-step process. So I don't know about Philadelphia. At the same time, I'm not really sold on the Bears right now. 14 points last week against Houston. The first team offense struggling throughout the preseason.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna give the game to Chicago because they're the home team, and I'm gonna say that Wentz looks real rookie-ish in this game. But I don't know. This is an either or, especially because we're talking Monday Night Football here too, and those games can be real weird.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm not feeling it for Chicago right now.
But I'm not feeling it for Philly.
I don't really feel it for Philly
know.
By any stretch either.
But I'm really not feeling it for Chicago.
I did think, and regardless of the Browns, I did think that that Philly D looked a little bit better under Jim Schwartz, the first iteration under Jim Schwartz that we've seen. There was a lot of good stuff I saw out of that defense last week. So. I think the Bears defense could be vulnerable to an attacking defense, maybe.
Bears defense or the Bears offense?
The Bears offense could be vulnerable to an attacking defense like that. I don't know how good this Bears defense is yet. I know they've gotten some other guys, but I don't know if they're definitely not where they want to be.
No,
they're still kind of a work in progress too. So, I definitely can see this one going either way. I'll fade the Bears and take Philly here, and I'm not sure exactly why. I really don't have a good reason. It's almost like a coin flip in my head, and I don't know. I guess I'm just kind of feeling the cynicism of all the Bears fans that are surrounding me in
the
city.
Well, those were our week 2 minute picks. Considering they're closing on a guy saying, I'm just picking, I don't know, I have no idea. These are for entertainment purposes only, folks. It's on you if you do something else.
Well,
with
it's
them.
Also that's a Monday night game. You know what I mean? It's a Monday night game, so who knows what you're going to get? It's probably going to be, anyway.
Yeah. Well, that's it for our week 2 minute picks. We're going to take a quick break here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. We're going to close this on out for you this week, so stay tuned. That's a wrap for the Week 2 2016 NFL Season Edition of the F-Ball NFL Podcast. Again, thank you all for joining us this week and every week that you manage to or choose to. We appreciate it, each and every one of you. And there's no point in us talking into microphones, recording stuff for an hour a week if we don't have anybody listening. So we appreciate all of you taking time out of your busy lives to listen to us blather on about football. I'm, of course, the host here. I'm Andrea Hengst. You can find my NFL writing at thecomeback.com, sportsatearth.com, and cle.scout.com, the Orange and Brown Report. You can also follow my Facebook writer page. That's facebook.com/ahankstnfl to get all of my content, including this here podcast, all in one convenient place. And I'm on Twitter at fball_Andrea. That's FBALL_Andrea.
And again, I'm Brian. I co-host this podcast as well as produce the podcast. And if you want to yell at me because I said that your team's defensive coordinator is somebody that it's not, you can do that at Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
All right, everybody, enjoy week two, and we'll be back next week to recap all the action and, of course, make our week 3 minute picks.
Yes.
Right here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast.
Later.
Peace.